All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my rapid reaction to the Atlanta Falcons' 37-10 loss to the Los Angeles Rams in Week 7.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Today is the rapid reaction where I give you my initial thoughts and takeaways from this Week 7 game against the Los Angeles Rams, a game in which the Falcons lost by a score of 37-10. Lots of people calling for the firing of Dan Quinn after this one. I personally think another coach should be fired ahead of Dan Quinn. At least give Dan Quinn one game where he is not saddled by a certain assistant coach on this team before you decide to fire him. We know he's eventually going to get fired, but I just want to see if maybe, just maybe, you remove one coach and maybe it could potentially lead to a spark to resurrect this team to get back to a level that at least we thought it would be going into the 2019 season. But that is something I will get into later on today's episode. But without further ado, let's get into today's Locked On Falcons lead story. The job security of Dan Quinn and the idea of firing Dan Quinn is something that I don't advocate for, but we are certainly inching closer to that day, and whether it happens this week or the following week, heading into the Falcons bye week, going into week 8, or sometime later in November, December, or January is not for me to say. But, you know, I feel like looking at this week 7 performance against the Rams, I do feel like the defense, again, given the relatively low bar that they have set so far this season, did show improvement in this game, particularly in the first half, kept the Falcons in the game. You know, they got a stop. The special teams gave up a fourth down conversion, or they got several stops, and the special teams then gave up a fourth down conversion late in the second quarter, which they then held the Rams to a field goal. I think that's a positive given how this defense has performed this season to not give up 7 points in that situation. Now, if we're being fair, I don't think we got the Rams' best punch in this game. They haven't been performing like a juggernaut throughout the season. I don't think they look like a juggernaut by any means, especially compared to some of their previous outings in 2017 and 2018 under head coach Sean McVay. They didn't look like that team today. I think their play calling was relatively conservative. I think Jared Goff, their quarterback, missed a lot of throws. Sort of my initial viewing, we'll sort of have to see if the film confirms that. But at least as far as his defense is concerned, my takeaway from that is beggars can't be choosers. My real beef is with the offense that was basically scored on the opening drive of the game and then was held without a score until the very end of the game when Matt Schaub came into the game and got some, you know, garbage time touchdown on a throw to Austin Hooper. And so if any coach is going to get fired on Monday morning this week, I think it's offensive coordinator Dirk Koetter. And I think the Falcons should then promote quarterbacks coach Greg Knapp to replace him. But going back to some of the defensive improvements that we saw, I think some of the things that we've talked about in recent episodes on this podcast, we saw sort of implemented today. And I think, you know, maybe not coincidentally led to some of the improvements. We saw more of Jamal Carter at strong safety and Kamal Ishmael moving to the linebacker position. Bleedy Ray Wilson played most of the game at right cornerback instead of Isaiah Oliver. We saw times where Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley were dropping in the coverage. It seemed like they dropped in the coverage a bunch today. I thought they handled those responsibilities fairly well. One of the things I'll go back and see when I watch the film is whether or not those, all of those instances were on three-man rushes, or did the Falcons dial up, you know, blitz some of their linebackers on those plays when they had Beasley or Tack dropping in the coverage. And I know a lot of people, you know, reacted negatively to Vic Beasley being in coverage on the Todd Gurley touchdown in this game, but I do think it was really excellent coverage by Beasley on that play, and I think Jared Goff made a perfect throw, and there's really no defense for a perfect throw. And it's plays like that that I sort of been the type of plays that is why for years I have been an advocate of Vic Beasley being utilized more in an Anthony Barr type of off linebacker role rather than sort of the pure pass rushing role that the Falcons have really tried to push for over the last several seasons since they drafted him. You know, the fact that he was step for step with Ty Gurley on a wheel route, I think is an indication of Vic Beasley's athleticism and natural ability, particularly in man coverage. In a lot of ways, Falcon fans tend to take out a lot of frustration on Vic Beasley, particularly this week, given the rumors that broke last week that, you know, he is on the trade block, which is the trade deadline comes up on October 29th, a little more than a week from today, as you guys are listening to this. And I think a lot of people think he should be rushing and he's a better rusher. I would disagree with that statement. You know, I think if you're mad at that particular play, it's not Vic Beasley rushing, dropping in the coverage. I think really the issue there is the fact that the Falcons only rushed three on that particular play. And instead, if they're going to drop Vic Beasley into coverage and have the other three down linemen rush, you want one of the linebackers to blitz. And I think that's really been one of the big issues that Dan Quinn and his questionable play calling has suffered throughout this season, which is his propensity to dial up a significant number of three-man rushes and should be rushing four or five or six almost every single down, and he's not doing that. And I think that's been one of my biggest issues with Dan Quinn's play calling is sort of the vanilla blitz concepts and the lack of blitz concepts that he's really running. And he should be, you know, stacking the line of scrimmage with more rushers to sort of disguise some of these blitzes and make offenses that have to adjust their protections and maybe get some more overload blitzes and all these sorts of things to dial up a little bit more pressure in these situations. But he's not really doing that. And I think that's really been my biggest beef with Dan Quinn. But, you know, of course, my other big beef with Dan Quinn is the hiring of Dirk Koetter. And, you know, that has led to a lot of issues for this Falcons offense this season. And we'll get into some of those that they displayed today against the Rams later on in the episode. But before we get there, I want to let you guys know about Peloton and their limited time offer. You can get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use the promo code LOCKED to get started. That's onepeloton.com and use that promo code LOCKED. So after another loss, I don't know if we can say that the Falcons are showing too much confidence on the football field, but maybe you guys can get a little bit of confidence in the bedroom by checking out BlueChew.com. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they'll work up to twice as fast as a pill. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. Blue Chew is made in the USA, and since it's prepared and shipped direct, it's cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, you can take advantage of this special offer by visiting BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free. When you use our special promo code LOCKEDON, just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, and faster choice. So we're talking about this Week 7 game, and we're going to talk quite a bit about the offense coming up here on this segment of today's Locked On Falcons podcast. And one of the big stories coming out of this game is the injury to Matt Ryan. He got hurt at the beginning of the fourth quarter when Aaron Donald beat Wes Schweitzer for a sack, rolled up on his ankle, forced a fumble, recovered it as well, led to a turnover. And eventually, I don't think the Rams scored on the ensuing drive, but I could be misremembering there. I'll circle back to Ryan's injury, but I do want to say I don't think Matt Ryan had another questionable game again relative to his usual standards. I think it was another sort of B-C+ level game. But in his defense, I think the pass protection was very problematic throughout the game. But I do think he missed a couple of throws early in this game, particularly in the first quarter, that could have extended drives and potentially led to some points for this Falcons offense. But as for Ryan's injury, it's not something I'm panicking over. I know Adam Schefter tweeted out after the game that the Falcons don't believe it's serious. He'll get an MRI. And that was my live sort of indication looking at it, sort of seeing him pop up immediately, walk off the field, walk over to the trainer's table, not get carted off, you know, sort of sit on the bench. And then when the Falcons decided to, you know, put Matt Schaub into the game. That's when they took him to the locker room to, I guess, do whatever further measures they needed to do, ice it up and whatnot. So I wasn't too worried about Matt Ryan. I could think back at that time when Will Svitek, I think it was the Lions, where Will Svitek stepped on his ankle really badly and he missed a single snap. It came, you know, went out the game, got it taped up and came right back in the game. And it's like, Matt Ryan's tough as nails. Whatever you want to say about him, positive, negative, or whatever the case may be, there's no denying that he is one of the toughest SOBs out there. And so to me, the worst case scenario for him, at least initially and based off of Schefter's tweet, that's sort of my initial instinct. And again, I don't have any inside information, but I'm at least being at least optimistic at this point in time on the podcast. You know, worst case scenario is they sit him for Seattle and he's ready to go coming out of the bye week against New Orleans and he gets a couple of extra weeks of rest there. So I think that's a positive, you know, but I think really the main issue in the second half, particularly for me, was the play calling was very questionable. You know, one of the reasons why the Falcons were calling so many screens, it seemed like, was because the Rams pass rush was so effective and they were hoping to sort of catch them off guard, but their screens were pretty ineffective. You know, it felt like they ran like three or four screens and I don't think completed any of them. You know, I'll sort of have to look at the tape and sort of see what that is. But, you know, my guess based off of previous film study and initial watching is part of the reason why the screens were so ineffective is because how vanilla they are in terms of Dirt Cutter's designs there, sort of running all those tunnel screens and whatnot. Pretty predictable type of stuff. And the other thing I've noticed this season is how often Dirt Cutter has run screens off of play action passes, which, you know, if you've listened to this podcast, you know I'm a big believer that play action passes should be designed to be shot plays down the field, you know, on the intermediate and vertical levels. That's what you're supposed to be doing because the whole point of play action is to suck up those linebackers to open up opportunities on the intermediate stuff, suck up safeties to open up windows on the deep stuff. And the Falcons have often utilized it for screens where they throw the ball 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And that's been one of the reasons why you've heard me on this podcast and elsewhere complain about, to me, Dirt Cutter's poor play action passing concepts and whatnot. And so, you know, we saw at the end of the third quarter, they had no urgency. Yeah, they were down 24. Yeah, the game was over. But you thought they would, you know, they've been all about stat padding, if you ask me, these last couple of weeks. You know, they weren't really trying to do that. They were methodical, still running the football, which was baffling to me. You know, if you're going to run the ball to Brian Hill on that first play on the final drive in the third quarter, down 24, 2 minutes left in the third quarter, you know, if you're running that plays just so you can plan to run play action off the subsequent first down later in that series, okay, in hindsight, I can say, okay, I get why you did that. You wanted to at least present the possibility of a run because at that point in time, down 24, the team is assuming that you're going to throw the football in that situation. So you run it on first down only to later on run a play action pass. But they did run it, and they did a toss to Brian Hill, and they lost 6 yards, and that sort of directly led to them being backed up. And then Matt Ryan got hurt 2 plays later on that series. And like that type of mentality is dumbfounding to me. You know, I guess for me, it's just like my biggest issue with Dan Quinn right now is whether or not seeing what he did on the defensive side of the ball and whether he's going to continue to do this on the offensive side of the ball. We did see what looked to be a quick hook on James Carpenter early in this game, and then Wes Schweitzer came in. And as I recall, I think Wes Schweitzer played most of the second quarter at left guard. And I thought did a reasonable job. It really wasn't until late in the game where when the Falcons were well behind, where Aaron Donald seemed to sort of make his impact on this game. And, you know, they put Carpenter back out there and it led, you know, that was the drive where Ryan threw an interception. And, you know, it seemed like most of the pressure early in the game came from Caleb McGarry getting beat by Dante Fowler. But I'm just wondering sort of, is Dan Quinn going to stick with these veteran guys both on both sides of the ball, and Carpenter's sort of the main guy on the offense that I'm pointing at. That's why I brought him up. And because we saw Mike Smith do this in 2014, where he just sort of put all his trust in the veteran guys to sort of figure it out by the end of the season. And technically he wasn't wrong in that assessment, because after the Falcons started 2-6 that year, they did go 4-4 after the bye week. And so it the veterans did step up. You saw that with guys like Croy Bierman. I know Croy Bierman got a lot of hate from Falcon fans back then. And they were like, we got to play Jonathan Mascoy. And I remember Jonathan Mascoy went off against the Ravens. He was cooking James Hurst because James Hurst, for some reason, couldn't defend an inside move. You know, he was basically cooking him like a Ty Sambrello or a Chaz Green type. And, you know, then Mascoy completely fell off the face of the cliff, face of the earth. And that was sort of the first time I was like, oh, like just because you beat bad offensive tackle doesn't make you good. And I think that's part of the reason why I was a little bit better prepared than a lot of Falcon fans were for Vic Beasley, and sort of being able to sort of sniff out the truth about Vic Beasley's potential as a pass rusher a lot earlier than, you know, 99% of the rest of the fan base, or let's say 98%. For the 2% out of you that were right with me on Vic Beasley being overrated in 2016, I salute you. But for the other 98% of you guys, no. You can kick rocks. Okay. I'm kidding, guys. But yeah, man, like, you know, I do wonder if Dan Quinn's going to be a little bit more proactive making some of these shifts and continue to play some of these young guys like we saw on defense today. You know, B.J. Wilson, nah. You know, let's get Jordan Miller a shot. You know, why did it take so long for the Falcons to get Brian Hill in the game once Ito Smith went out? And speaking of Ito Smith going out, you know, that's the injury that I'm much more worried about than Matt Ryan at this point. You know, this is the second concussion that Ito Smith has had in 4 weeks. And remember, we were certainly concerned when Devontae a couple of years ago had 2 and 3 months. And we were concerned that what would happen if he had a third one. And that was the main concern going into the 2018 season, at least for me, as far as Devontae's injury potential. And then it ultimately proved to be his knees that were more problematic. But for Ito to have 2 concussions off of 2 blitz pickups in 4 weeks, you know, I do wonder sort of, are we going to see Ito Smith for a while? Like, not just missing a week, but like, could we see him missing a month or more? You know, that's the injury concern that I'm really worried about right now, because this could affect his career. And, you know, again, I'm not a doctor. It's up to medical personnel to make these type of decisions. But, you know, if he gets a third concussion before the year is up, then, you know, I don't know if he's going to play football. You know, like, that's how serious this stuff is. Like, 3 concussions in a single year, like, that's kind of, you know, in today's sort of climate, like, that's, you got to retire after that. You know, that's my concern right now for Ito Smith. So I'm hoping, you know, it was, I guess you could say the best case scenario was like a minor dinger. And because he just had another concussion a month ago, you know, the Falcons were being extra cautious, carting him off the field and all that sort of stuff. That's what I'm hoping. But like, it was clear that when you saw the replay, he was out. Got hit in the helmet, like he dropped like a sack of potatoes, as they say, and he was out. You know, he was unconscious for at least a couple of seconds there. So that's what's scary about that whole situation. So I'm hoping that Ito is going to be fine, but certainly right now I am definitely more concerned about his long-term well-being, certainly than, you know, whether or not he's going to play next week or anything like that. So hopefully he'll get better. And we'll continue our conversation talking, you know, of me slandering Dirt Cutter coming up on today's episode. But before we get there, guys, look, the NBA season is right around the corner. So you should be checking out your favorite NBA team's daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. We have shows for every NBA team, including for your Atlanta Hawks. If you happen to be a Hawks fan, Locked On Hawks, hosted by my good friend Brad Rowland. I'm sure Brad will be joining this podcast in the next couple of weeks, you know, to get you guys geared up for the Hawks season. You know, since there's not a whole lot going on with the Falcons currently, but you can find the Locked On Hawks or any daily Locked On NBA show on your favorite podcast platform, including Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. So, like, if you ask me, do you think Greg Knapp is a better offensive coordinator play caller than Dirk Cutter? I would say no. But at this point in time, I'm like, I don't see why Greg Knapp would be significantly worse. And I would love to give him that opportunity to be significantly worse. You know, I feel like the hope is that Greg Knapp will dial up more play action passes. And that's really the central part of my frustration with Dirk Cutter and his play calling. And like, we knew, again, we had Marco on Vienna Falcons on in the spring. We talked about this and whether or not Dirk Cutter is going to, you know, do the play action stuff, because that was something that he didn't do a lot of in Atlanta in his previous stint, but he did a ton of it in Tampa Bay. It was like, okay, well, was he doing that in Tampa Bay because he didn't really have confidence in Jameis Winston, or was he doing that because he understood the value of play action passing? And watching it so far this season, outside of maybe two, maybe three games, the answer is no, he was just doing that because of Jameis Winston. And it's, you know, it goes back to some of the things that critiques I've already leveled out. It's just so vanilla with his play calling. And, you know, they should be dialing up these shot plays and these play action passes on first downs. They should be taking more shots. You know, I didn't see really any of that today. I won't sit here and say they didn't do that at all, because maybe I just missed it. But it didn't seem like they did really much of that in this game. It's always these sort of, on their first down play calling, it's always this sort of low risk, low reward type of pass plays, or it's a run play. And, you know, then they got into a bunch of second and longs and they struggled in those situations today. And that led to a bunch of third and longs today. And so they faced like third and eight or longer six times out of the 12 third downs that they had today. And they, you know, they didn't convert any of those. A couple of weeks ago, they were, I can't remember which game it was, but a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Houston. You know, they had a lot of success on third and longs in one of those games. Maybe it was the Colts game. I can't remember. And I'm sure if Dirk Cutter's, you know, doing his press conference this week, you know, if someone asks him that question, he's going to be like, you know, he's going to double down on, we need to run the ball better, blah, blah, blah. We need to have our pass protection improved, blah, blah, blah. And like, that's kind of my beef with Dirk Cutter. It's like, he's just going to keep doing what he does. He's not going to adjust. And it's just basically banging your head in the wall, and you just keep banging it enough and you'll eventually break through. But, you know, never mind the brain damage that you get doing that. And, you know, that's why he got fired in Tampa Bay. Everybody that I know that covers the Bucs on a daily basis, you know, talked about how sort of stuck in his ways that him and Mike Smith were. You can certainly say that was a big part of what led to their downfall in the first time in Atlanta as well. And I'm not really trying to pass the buck away from Dan Quinn. You know, Dan Quinn made his bed. He is responsible for hiring Dirk Cutter. But as I've said a couple of times now, that hiring, that one decision, in my opinion, is, to me, the main reason why Dan Quinn is going to lose his job. It's not the only reason, but it's the main reason. And I don't want to sit here and blame everything on Dirk Cutter, because you know I'm not the person that wants to be reductive, and you know I'm not the person that advocates for people losing their jobs. But it's one of those things, like, I just have no affinity for Dirk Cutter whatsoever. And I just, like, that dates back from his previous stint here in Atlanta, and I'm just tired of it. And for this offense to come out and just to completely lay an egg like they did today and not have any plan, like, we knew this Rams pass rush was going to get after it, and I thought a big reason why they could hopefully not let them get after it is by running play action and doing that to design their passing game out of play action. It may be naive on my part, but I just kind of think, like, man, they should be running play action like every single pass. Like, I know you can't realistically do that, but, like, I don't understand why 25 to 35% of your plays aren't play action passes. That why are you not doing that? Why are we seeing that? And again, Dan Quinn is ultimately responsible for hiring Dirk Cutter, but my personal theory, and part of the reason why I guess I'm like 12% more forgiving of Dan Quinn in this regard, because I think he wanted Gary Kubiak. I think that's who he wanted to hire. But then when Denver blocked it, they just moved on. Now, maybe they should have stuck with it and gone through back channels to figure out a way to get Gary Kubiak here. But, you know, maybe that's, but ultimately, I don't know how that situation exactly went down. So they kind of moved on, and it seemed like the top three candidates they had after that point were Adam Gase, Dirk Cutter, and Daryl Bevel. And Gase clearly wanted to be a head coach and is also, you know, kind of a douchebag. So they didn't go in that direction, understandably. And, you know, Bevel isn't exactly a world beater. And my personal theory is because Dan Quinn was going to take over the defense, he wanted someone with a little bit more, quote unquote, executive authority to run the offense on the offense and be the offensive coordinator, a guy that had a head coaching experience. I think that's one of the reasons why they hired Mike Mularkey and fired Wade Harmon, is to have more guys that had that head coaching experience in the event, you know, along with Raheem Morris, in the event that, you know, Dan Quinn's duties calling plays on defense would cause him to sort of take less input on coaching the rest of the team and the offense and whatnot. And so if he needed to hand the reins over, he would have three offensive former head coaches in this league sort of running things and could sort of run things in his absence, not to mention Dave Brock, who I think is the running backs coach, was a college head coach as well. So they had a lot of that executive authority on that side of the ball. So I think, you know, given that, and also Dirk Cutter's previous experience with Matt Ryan and the perception that that would allow Dirk Cutter to hit the ground running and you wouldn't go through that sort of that first year misstep with him, I think that's what led Dan Quinn to hire Dirk Cutter. And again, this is something that we talked about back in January. It seemingly made sense. On paper, it made sense. And I think we all were duped. Even me, who was like the biggest skeptic of Dirk Cutter that you could find out there, didn't think it was going to be this bad. Like, I thought, okay, like, he'll be competent because, you know, we have all this talent. We have all these pieces. We got to fix the offensive line and all that sort of thing. But getting Devontae back with these with this talented young core wide receivers and Matt Ryan and all these sorts of things, this offense will be good. It's just, you know, for me, my big question was, yeah, Cutter's not going to be bringing a lot in January if and when the Falcons get there. And that's where his limitations, similar to what we saw with Steve Sarkisian, we're going to get, you know, exposed and whatnot. But we're not even close to being in January. And again, I know everybody focuses on the defense and the defense is terrible. I get that. But this team has been guided by its offense. They have lived and died by their offense's ability to basically mask the defense's issues and be able to put points on the board and put this defense in more favorable situations. And today was the opposite. The defense kept the Falcons' offense in the game and the offense completely laid an egg. And so while it's easy to sit here and be like, yeah, the defense is trash, and I would 100% agree with you, we got to talk about this offense, guys. There's no excuse for this offense to go, what, 9 consecutive series in this game without scoring points, you know, and to have the field goal. And, you know, I know they missed the field goal and whatnot, and I know people are going in on Matt Bryant, but it is what it is. Basically, my theory, the last 2 kicks that Matt Bryant has missed were instances where the Falcons should have went for it. You know, they should have went for 2 against Arizona, and they kicked the extra point. He missed it, and then they should have went for it on 4th and 6, potentially going into halftime knowing that you're down at that point, that you're down 10 points or 7 points at that point. No, I think they were down 10 points. You know, the Rams are going to get the ball back at the start of the half. You need 7. Like, kicking a field goal in that situation isn't going to help you get back into this game because you're basically hoping that your defense gets 2 consecutive stops, which they actually – got a stop right after that on, you know, in the half to close out the half. And then, you know, gave up points, you know, at the start of the 3rd quarter. But it was one of those things where it's like, that's where you have to be aggressive. And, you know, that's where I'm going to criticize Dan Quinn. He's got to make those calls. You got to be aggressive. You got to trust, hey man, this offense can get 6 yards on a 4th down. We need to score 7 here if we're going to get back into this game. And that's where questionable game management comes in with Dan Quinn because he's made some mistakes. And so far, you know, Bob Sutton hasn't really helped him in that regard. But again, Dirk Cutter, man, like, we got to do better than this, guys. You know me. I'm not the person that's going to be sitting and we need to fire this guy. Or if we fire this guy, all of our problems. Like, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and tell you that all the Falcons' problems go away. But maybe, just maybe, this offense will at least get to 40% of what we thought it was going to be if somebody else is calling the plays. Because I don't think that's going to happen on Dirk Cutter. And what's frustrating is I felt like they were making incremental improvements over the last couple of weeks on offense where it was like, okay, they're doing more play action. They're getting back to the style of offense. They're running some more outside zone stuff. You know, they're doing some of the things that we've had so much success doing over the last 4 years, and they started to get back to that over the last 3 weeks, and we saw some incremental improvement for the offense, but then it completely comes crashing down, and I'm over it. That's my personal takeaway. So, you know, everybody else is like, yeah, fire Dan Quinn, which, again, Dan Quinn's job is he's going to be gone eventually. Again, whether that's a week from today or a month from today or 2 months from today is whatever to me. But, like I just can't do another week of Dirk Cutter. Or if I can do another week, it's, like, only because the bye week is coming up and Arthur Blank needs to go and be like, okay, let's get Greg Knapp a little bit more involved in this offense, in this Seahawk game, leading up to the Seahawk. Get him more involved in the game plan because we're firing Dirk Cutter after the Seahawk game. Unless they drop, like, 37 points against the Seahawks defense, he's got to go. And that'll give Greg Knapp 2 weeks to prepare for the Saints, and let's go. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if that will be the thing that sparks this offense. because they need something. Because, again, I'm not suggesting that they're going to save their season or turn it around. The season's been over for weeks now. Basically, since they lost Tennessee, that we knew that the season was over at that point. I know some people were still in denial about that. But all I want to be is entertained. Give me the old Falcons offense. Give me the Steve Sarkisian offense. Give me the 2017 Steve Sarkisian offense, man. You know, the offense that gets to the red zone and completely, you know, craps the bed. I'll take that offense. I'll take a great offense between the 20s and then can't score in the red zone and just has to kick a bunch of field goals. I mean, at least Matt Bryan will get more opportunities to get stop people from criticizing him in that situation. I'll take that over a current offense that can't even get into field goal range. I mean, Matt Bryan had to kick 2 50-yard field goals, guys. We couldn't even get past the friggin' 30-yard line. Like, that's ridiculous until Matt Schaub came into the game. Like, that's ridiculous to me. So, I don't know what else to say, guys. Like, he's got to go. I'm sorry. He's got to go. He's got to go. Like, that's pathetic. That's just pathetic to me. So, we'll be back tomorrow to talk more about this game. But it's, I don't know. It's beyond me. It's beyond me. So, yeah, guys, appreciate you sending in, or I will appreciate you guys sending in any questions that you may have. Or any comments or suggestions that you may have, you can do so. Hit me up on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. But if it is podcast related, if you want to ask a question for a future Q&A episode that we will do on Thursday when we break down the All-22, send in that question to Locked On Falcons on Twitter. Locked On Falcons is the name of the Facebook page, as well as you can submit your questions there. And you can send emails to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.